Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, Julia Chopek is originally a PR consultant, but turned into a researcher when her husband got sick. Julia, tell us a little bit about this silver ions and why it works, this silver ion, silver on material and silver itself, and why it works for healing wounds.
Well, this is so interesting, Dave. Thank you so much for asking about it, because it's the treatment that literally set me on my road to teaching people about other treatments, you know, that doctors may not know about. It's very interesting. In my book, In Honest Medicine, the inventor of Silverlon, Dr. Bart Flick, gives his interpretation of why it works. But I should say that before antibiotics were invented, silver was routinely used for healing, especially antimicrobial, not letting the germs in. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, Dr. Flick taught me that at Johns Hopkins, silver was used as a healing agent, you know, years and years and years earlier. But then, as I said, with the beginning of antibiotics, guess what fell out of favor was the silver. Now, how does it work? This is pieces of material. Silverlon is not a salve. You know, it's routinely accepted, actually, that silver does work, because there is a cream called Silvadine that doctors do know about. And it is, as I said, a cream that does have a little bit of an amount of silver in it. But Silverlon is pieces of material. It's a healing system that are impregnated with silver ions. And Dr. Flick has a theory. He says, first of all, it is an antimicrobial. And that's one of the things you do worry about if you have an opening like my husband did, you know, a head wound that isn't closed. You do worry about germs getting in. So that's one thing it does. But according to Dr. Flick, it also brings in, you put the Silverlon on way beyond, 2 centimeters on each side, beyond the wound itself. And Dr. Flick uses the word healing potential, the words healing potential. He says that what happens is that the, you know, you have healthy skin that you have the Silverlon on also, if it's two centimeters on every side of the wound. And he says that this silver material, when it's dampened, when it's wet, brings the healing potential of the good skin to the bad skin, to the wound, and helps it to heal. And not only did I see it heal my husband's head wound, and it was a huge wound. I don't love being on TV as much as radio, but I would love to be able to show you how big that wound was. You know, it was a long suture line that just wasn't healing. Mm. But it just healed it right up. You know, within a few days, it was obviously never going to open up again. But then years later, I had an experience when my husband years later was in dying, and he had bed sores. And what do you think was the only thing that cured the bed sores?
Silverlon.
Yeah. So it's, and then, you know, I wrote an article. The story of this is in my book, that I wrote an article. You know, the doctors, as I told you, were not at all interested, right? So I said, I got to get the word out. So I called. It was a cold call, too. You know, I called up the National Brain Tumor Foundation, and I talked to the editor of their newsletter, and I said, I've got a really important story. I would like to write, and, you know, no pay. I don't want to be paid, but I would love to write an article about how Silverlon, this material, did heal my husband's non-healing suture line. And they were interested, because this is the little-known dirty secret of brain surgeries, that, you know, the head skin on the head is very tight. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like skin on other parts of the body where there's room for, you know, but this is very tight on the head, and this happens a lot, that there is non-healing, especially if the skin has been radiated before. So especially, like in the case of my husband, where it's a second surgery, second craniotomy, second brain tumor surgery after radiation, this happens a heck of a lot. So I got permission to write this article, and I can send it to people if they want. Just write to me at julia@honestmedicine.com. And I started hearing from people all over the country, you know, my I actually wanted doctors to learn about it, you know, but it was patients who called. My husband is in the hospital and his skin won't heal from a brain tumor. My brother, he's having trouble with his skin healing. So all of them wanted to know about Silverlawn. And Dr. Flick, bless his heart, said he would be willing to send it gratis, you know, for free to these people. And he would be willing to talk with the doctors. From what I understand, not any of the doctors were interested. One doctor, apparently, now I didn't hear this, so this is, you know, hearsay, but one patient told me that the doctor said to her, oh my God, is this going to put me out of business? And I don't want to believe that, but she says that that's what he said, you know. Mm. So, but anyway, doctors are still not using it in the hospital that healed Tim. They're using it in another department, not far from the neurosurgery department, but not where they saw the miracle of it for Tim. Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible. I was going to ask you, Julia, Silverlawn material, you know, when you put it on a wound like that that's open, is there any worry that it's going to become embedded in the skin?
You have some wonderful questions. Actually, I've never heard of that worry. You know, you put it on and you put it on very carefully. And as a matter of fact, I taped the directions. I got them from Dr. Flick and taped the directions in the hospital, you know. And it's very, very careful that you have to do. And it never does get embedded. It didn't in any of the circumstances where I used it. I don't know if there's ever been instances of it. You know, what I'm thinking now when you ask that question, Dave,
yeah,
is if there's an open wound, you know, that is kind of, you know, just all sorts of, you know, big bed of blood and everything, and that I don't know.
Mm. So when you put this stuff over the wound, I'm going to move on in a second, but when you put the stuff over the wound you put water on it or something, then the silver goes through into the skin. Is that how it works?
Yeah. And it's a fascinating, fascinating thing. By the way, for any of your listeners who are interested, as I said, I'll be glad to send them the article about our experience, but they can also go to Silverlawn.com. That's SilverLawn.com. And it talks all about it and has the studies. And I don't know if I mentioned it was FDA approved in, I believe, the mid-90s for all non-healing wounds. So there's all that information on the site.
I want to talk to you about Naltrexone, yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. I did an interview with somebody one time about that, but refresh my memory and tell us what it is and how it works and how you became interested in it.
Well, the very interesting thing, Dave, is, believe it or not, I learned about all the other treatments, the three other treatments that are in my book that are featured in Honest Medicine, when Tim was sick. Because I was searching and searching, you know, for other treatments that would help him out. And I did learn about low-dose naltrexone when Tim was sick. And the story of low-dose naltrexone is absolutely fascinating. And that is that there was a doctor, he died just a few years ago, named Bernard Bihari, B-I-H-A-R-I. And Dr. Bihari was Harvard-educated, double board-certified in neurology and psychiatry, and he was working with drug addicts, heroin addicts, in New York City. He was a real big shot in the New York City government, and at that time, a medicine, a drug called naltrexone, not low dose, but high dose naltrexone, it wasn't called high dose, it was just called naltrexone, was FDA approved at 50 milligrams, that's 50 milligrams, for drug addiction. That was in 1984. And in 1994, it was approved for alcohol addiction. Mm-hmm. And I'm no scientist, but the way it worked was that if patients took this naltrexone in high doses, and doctors were prescribing it at 50 to 100 to even 200 milligrams, if they were to take it in the morning, if they did use heroin or later alcohol, it didn't affect them. They didn't get high. And Dr. Bahari was interested in this because, as I said, he was working with people who were heroin addicts, and he gave it to some of his patients. And he noticed that while it did work, it did do what it was supposed to do, he said at that high dose, it was just toxic. Mm. The way he put it was that things that a patient could do the day before, he or she could no longer do because he was so hopped up on this naltrexone. But he noticed that with naltrexone, something was happening with the immune system and with endorphin levels. So he said, you know, I wonder what would happen if I titrated the dose down, if I gave people a low, low dose that wouldn't be toxic. And I wonder how it would affect, you know, the immune system and what it would do. And, you know, a lot of the people who were drug addicts that he was working with also had what was later known as HIV/AIDS. So he was wondering how it would affect their disease process. And when he got it down to, say, 3 milligrams he got it down to, he found that their HIV/AIDS was not progressing anymore. And he was like, holy, this is wonderful. And then he began, a friend of his daughter's named Chris Lombardi was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, MS. And at that time, there were no MS drugs the way there are today. And she came to her friend's father, Dr. Bahari, and she said, I wonder if that low dose of that drug would work on me, would help my multiple sclerosis. And he said, no harm in trying. You know, at 3 milligrams, it's absolutely non-toxic. So he gave it to her, and her MS stopped progressing. Mm. And this was the time before people were into the Internet, right? So people were, like, writing and calling, and word got around. And people came to New York to visit with Dr. Bahari to see him to get this low-dose naltrexone, which, by the way, he had named low-dose naltrexone. They came with lupus. They came with rheumatoid arthritis. They came with Crohn's disease. They came with fibromyalgia. They came with all sorts of chronic fatigue. And he found that it worked in a good percentage. This was not snake oil. I'm not going to tell you it worked on everybody. But it worked on a huge percentage of patients. And then, this is another interesting thing. Small studies began to be done at places like Penn State, University of California, San Francisco, also at Stanford. And they bore out what Dr. Bahari had found, that this low-dose naltrexone was good for, had very positive, promising results for Crohn's. That was Penn State. They did 3 studies at Penn State on Crohn's. Fibromyalgia was done. The studies were done at Stanford. And University of California, San Francisco, a study was done on MS. And there were other studies. I actually give my coaching clients a whole list, you know, of studies, the small studies that were done. And by the way, you might, you know, doctors still, even though small studies were done, they want to see large clinical trials with thousands and thousands of patients. And unfortunately, this is a drug that will not make anybody huge amounts of money. And I don't know if you probably know, but I don't know if your listeners know that most of the drug trials are done by the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So if there's no return on investment, they're not going to do it.
That's why you called your book Honest Medicine, Julia.
I did.
Now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding more honest medicine.